Hello, and welcome back to Conversations with Claire. We're doing audio.
Yeah.
I mean, we're doing video.
That too.
Look at us go.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're also recording this at 9:05 p.m., which is I saw Call Her Daddy recently did one really late at night, and that, you know, I don't know that inspired me as much as your schedule is really hard to work with, and so is mine, but...
We could have done this like an hour and a half ago, but...
It's okay. So my guest today is Jimmy House.
Hello.
You're a recurring guest. We have very few of those. Do you feel extra special?
Second time on the podcast.
Second time on this podcast.
Yeah. Yep. Few things have happened since the last one.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I think you subtly hit on me in the first one.
It worked.
There you go. He's like, I could leave now. Okay.
It only works one time though. So don't get any good ideas. Anybody that wants to be on your podcast.
Okay, so that's not why we're here, but so we got to intro you for anybody who doesn't know. One, yes, you are my boyfriend, but that's cool and all, and that's actually really cool, but that's not why you're here today. But you are also a pro wrestler.
Yes.
You last year got podium at powerlifting nationals in the natural division.
American pro. Yeah.
You also... are a black belt in jiu-jitsu.
Mm-hmm.
You train on Team New Wave here in Austin, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And have a pro card in bodybuilding in the natural division as well.
Yeah. Yep.
So just for context for anybody who didn't listen to the first one, which I actually think you totally should because it's really great. It was like very shortly after we had just met. And so that one was largely just like getting your story.
Yeah.
And now we're going to go into what I have learned in the time that I've known you. Is that you have quickly become the person that I respect the most, which is really cool. Not only personally, but in the gym, which was what like attracted me to begin with, was the initial like, oh, this person knows a thing or two. I could afford to learn from them. Okay. Hey, can we train together and I could learn from you? And then of course it evolved from there and now we're here.
I love you.
Ah, I love you too. So we are going to... unpack. You don't, he, by the way, guys, he doesn't even know what we're going to do today. So thank you for enduring 2 hours and or 2 minutes and 39 seconds of flirting. But now we're going to get into business. What you know about business? Okay. So what I have you here today to do is I had a little chat with AI earlier today and asked it, what are the top 10 most commonly asked questions of fitness professionals?
Okay.
And so that's what I have.
All right.
And that's what we're going to answer.
Let's do it.
And I love it because the further unpack, I said all of the professional things that you're doing in sport, but I didn't even touch on the fact that you also run a very successful coaching business, both in-person training clients as well as online, that employs multiple friends of yours. So this is a business that has multiple employees that is doing really well, and you coach a lot of very high-level athletes.
For sure. Thank you.
So... I think you're kind of cool.
Likewise.
Okay. So question number one, are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to start with the basics. Well, they're all going to be basics. How do I lose weight effectively?
I think that when it comes to the majority of people, it almost is less about calories in versus calories out. That is the literal definition of losing weight. But a lot of that can be controlled through your habits through your nutrition. So I've learned a fair amount from you and a bunch of other people that has gotten me to the point to where I don't necessarily have to be super contingent on tracking all the time, but with good food choices and good food timing, nutrient timing, that has allowed me to maintain a really lean body mass, or for most people lose weight without having to put a whole lot extra thought into calculating specific calories and macros. However, it is beneficial and it is helpful to know about where that's at any given point, but it's not something that has to be a toxic habit that makes you want to not diet or have nutrition as a part of your life and then regain all that weight back. So I would say that eating whole foods, I would say that getting rid of processed foods, I would say that being very aware of the ingredients and foods that come off as healthy, but may not be all that healthy. Healthy is super beneficial. And I would also say that being aware that sometimes the healthy foods can be more calorically dense in volume. And sometimes being able to just have a good idea of how much you're getting in with those types of foods can be helpful, because that can just help you have better control over your daily calorie intake without too much extra thought, on top of a general exercise routine, obviously.
Yeah. So to lose weight effectively, it would be ultimately caloric intake,
mm-hmm.
right? So what
I was, yeah. So to branch off that, I would say caloric intake and having your own personal strategy to control that for you, to where you start to understand where the fine line is from being well fed and having good energy throughout the day and being able to perform, whether it's in your job or in your workouts or just day to day, but then also understand where that line is and not overconsume. Mm. And then that's where, for myself in particular, nutrient timing and timing of certain macronutrients like carbohydrates has been really helpful. Just putting those through the majority of the beginning of my day or prior to whatever training session I'm doing, and then cutting out that at night can be a good way to have some control over your calories without, again, being so overconsumed in the exact number that you have to hit on a daily basis. I think if anything, having a goal to hit protein consistently day to day is good. And you don't necessarily have to be always typing these numbers in to know that you're hitting your adequate protein, but then just being able to understand what the carbs and fats do in your body and like how to appropriately time those within your training or your day to day is a good way to just lose weight without having to put too much thought into it, and also develop the right lifestyle habits that allow you to do this long term. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I would say I was 270 back when I was 20, 21, got really, really heavy, just ate really, really poorly. And I've always fluctuated from really heavy, like anywhere from 240 to 270. And this is like post 20. And then I would go back down to 200 or 190 for something. And then I would get back up to 230, 240, and then go back down and go back up to 220.
How like, what are the time spans of that fluctuation?
Sometimes it's a year. Sometimes it's 6 or 8 months. I can put on weight pretty quickly if I'm not very good on my nutritional habits.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, it was dieting with a means to end. So going really, really hard and being very, very strict and sticking to that strict diet for a finite amount of time. But then in that pursuit, there is an understanding in my head that there's an end to this where I can let loose and, you know, relax a little bit and stuff like that. And then I would always gain the weight back. I knew that from a mental fortitude standpoint, I could always lose the weight again. That's what I always put trust into. So like my dad used to always remind me that I was gaining weight during these phases. And I would always tell him like, I'll lose it again, Dad. I lost it once. I can lose it again. And then I would lose the last major cut I did was 50 pounds in 10 weeks. And then at the end of the 10 weeks, I was like, see, I told you I'd lose it again, you know, but then at the end of that last cut, which was about 3 years ago now, almost 3 years ago, that's when I decided like, maybe I just don't gain the 50 pounds and I just find the right foods that I enjoy and the right habits that will allow me to maintain what has been about 200 to 205, sometimes 210 body weight for now the last 3 years, which I've never done in my adulthood. You know, mm-hmm. I hit 195, 205 at the end of high school. And then after that, like I said, I went through those big fluctuations. And then the last 3 years, I've just developed the habits that have allowed me to maintain this body weight
mm-hmm.
while still putting on muscle, feeling that I'm like efficient in training in the gym, and then also just feeling overall well fed. And even though my calories may not be that of somebody that's trying to gain a bunch of weight, I never necessarily feel as though I'm starving either. And that's a very distinct feeling that I'm very well aware of training in cutting calories or near starvation type calories
mm-hmm.
and just forcing yourself through it rather than just being at a calorie intake that's going to allow you to maintain a certain body weight and drop body fat slowly over time, but it's much more sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
And then the workouts are way better. So then you're you have more energy to put into building legitimate muscle mass, and having more muscle mass is going to make you look leaner, and having more muscle mass is going to allow your body to burn more calories without even having to exercise, and all these different things. So it's like a long-term game, but you kind of help your body become more proficient in burning fat also in the short term. That's how mm-hmm. I think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love it because I look at this through, and this is where this is no surprise that we're going to both weigh in. And so that I love knowing how much progress you've made personally with nutrition. It's been really, really cool to watch you come to this like peaceful coexistence with it on a consistent basis and have the energy to perform and stuff. Like, I've only been around the last however many 8 months now or whatever, but it's been really cool. And you do have so much experience with those extremes where there's like a lot of weight gain rapidly or a lot of weight loss rapidly. And so you have intimate knowledge of how to do either side and now how to maintain for extended periods of time, which for the general person listening is really going to not be looking to do these massive gains or losses. And they really do just, number one, how do I lose weight effectively? You know, most people. So when I read that, what my reaction says is like, what if we reframe your relationship? Like, what if that's not the right question? You know, and that's okay. That's a fair question. Maybe you have body fat that losing it would mean that you would be in better health. So that's a good thing. But what if you reframe your relationship instead of how do I lose weight effectively and other things like how do I gain lean mass? Because I know from my experience, when I can get my clients to focus on gaining lean mass and focus less energy on the losing fat mass, gaining, you know, building out awareness around the protein consumption, the caloric intake, just being aware of what's going on. If we can hammer out these details of behaviors, the body fat will come off, the weight will come off, we'll get that done. But we've got all of this other work to do mm-hmm. to convince you that you are worth it. And all of these other, like, yet I go into my emotional health stuff, but like all of those things do truly matter. I actually was listening to someone else, you know, Brian Mobile Mammoth say in the classroom yesterday in a workshop I was in, he said one of the first questions he asks his clients is, are you ready to forgive your mom and dad? Right. And he's a personal trainer. And so it was just, like we can laugh at that. And it is like, I mean, I heard it and I was like, bro, I mean, I agree.
Yeah.
But like, that's deep. You're asking a lot of this person and they just showed up, you know, but it is also the truth. Like we got to take a look at the whole human. And so when I read, how do I lose weight effectively? My brain just goes into like, maybe instead of focus on weight loss, if focusing on weight loss has been a struggle point, if that's where you've been time and time again, and you have not seen lasting success, maybe we need to pivot your focus and let the weight loss come naturally from your ability to focus on something else.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, I think weight loss is, at the end of the day, unless there's some health restriction that says otherwise for an individual, very, very simple.
Yep.
And relatively easy. It's truly just a game of patience and consistency. And that's what everybody knows to be true. Even people that haven't really been in fitness ever. It's just, how does patience and consistency apply per individual given their individual lifestyle? And to some degree, you'll have to develop the habits of some form of movement, some form of nutrition, some form of rest and recovery. And that can all change and vary depending upon who that is. Mm-hmm. But just having those blocks filled,
right,
or those spaces filled.
Yep.
And if there's something to fill that space, then you'll inevitably see some progress. The majority of people that have trouble losing weight mm-hmm. that are new to fitness or just haven't been around fitness at all have so many major gaps. And so starting that weight loss journey is just a matter of filling in these gaps of movement, nutrition, and rest and recovery. Mm-hmm. And then I think you provide a good point, the emotional side of things that then allows that person to have more confidence, have more belief, be able to pivot when obstacles come their way. The emotional side of things that really isn't talked about with dieting and fitness really at all, mm-hmm. not that I've ever heard, at least not commonly, that plays a major role in somebody's ability to get past plateaus in their ability to not compare themselves to others, at least in a detrimental way that prevents them from achieving their own goals. So there's that aspect as well. And sometimes, yeah, somebody could have everything down to a science and have everything down mathematically and have this perfect laid out plan, not counting what emotional stress could do to deter that plan and then just make it not work. It could be the most perfect plan, but if somebody's emotions or what have you doesn't allow them to follow it to a T, then it's almost not even worth having at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. The emotional thing, it's like so much of it is not diminished. Now we're just tangenting off and we still have nine more. So we've got to keep going, but I love it. Guys, this is what we do all day. But it's, you know, not diminishing the way that I feel about what's going on, being able to speak about it without shame when it comes to these things, all of life for that matter. And then also stripping out my emotions from my actions. I've got to marry all of this together of, okay, I'm not going to pretend that I don't feel things. That's untrue. So I can say, okay, I do feel things. Take a deeper look at what it is that I do feel. And then do my very best to continue to adhere to actions that are going to be supportive to the person that I'm trying to become, regardless of how I feel about it. The more I can strip out how I feel and take the action, the more I'll cultivate this lifestyle that will encourage the weight loss. So, okay, number two, what's the best exercise routine for my goals?
I don't understand how we're doing all 10 in one podcast. All these open-ended questions. Okay. So the best exercise routine for your goal, first you have to understand what your goal is.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to have a general understanding of what exercises, facet of fitness, whatever is generally thought of as being the most relative to achieving that goal. And then within that sector of whatever you determine that is, then find what you like to do and you can find that you can consistently do over a period of time and start there. Mm-hmm. And then as you get better at developing the habit of these, call it routines or specific exercises or splits or whatever you want to call it, then you can get more specific in regards to maybe adding in some stuff that you don't necessarily like, but you know that's beneficial. And then you can start really getting much more in detail with what you can do to achieve this goal. But let's say if you're new and you have a specific goal that requires a certain level of fitness or a certain type of fitness, I think it's important to just be able to understand what the goal is and then what you like to do within that goal to achieve it and stick with that. It's kind of like dieting, where if somebody starts dieting for the first time in their life and they're under this impression that they have to only stick to foods that they don't like because it's healthy or what have you, then that's something that has a means to an end.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's the same thing that with when it comes to fitness goals, having to do a certain type of exercise, maybe it's running, maybe it's lifting, maybe it's stretching, that you've been told will get you to your goal of losing weight, of getting muscle, of getting really lean, but you absolutely hate it, then that might not be the thing to start with, because maybe that 1% of people that can just kind of push through it or whatever and yield the results from it, that's good. But even still, I would consider myself in that range of people that can just kind of push through things that you don't like. But again, from my story, there's always a means to an end to that. So I'll push really hard and do the thing that I don't like to do, understanding that at a certain point I'm going to earn this goal and then stop. But if I find things that I truly like to do that are also cohesive and relative to that goal, then I don't necessarily have to ever stop. I can only really add on and then, or replace from time to time. And then by that, at that point, the consistency and the habit has been developed to where you've gone a year or 2 years of doing this particular thing that you genuinely enjoy doing outside of the results, but just for the endorphins that it derives from doing this exercise, to where you can start to do things that maybe will encourage more results that you wouldn't have liked at one point in time. But because you developed this habit, now you can implement these things that maybe aren't so appealing up front.
Yeah.
For me, it's always been running. And so now I'm at a point to where I have such good control over my diet for the most part, And then obviously the regular day-to-day training that I could add something that I absolutely hate, like running in small amounts, and find some enjoyment out of it, and find some enjoyment out of pushing myself to do something that I once knew that I never really wanted to do.
Yeah.
But had I started with running, or had I made running my main thing, my ability to be able to stick to that, very, very small. So now that I have this foundation of, let's call what I do, mobility and maybe some bodybuilding and powerlifting in there or whatever, now that I have this foundation, that will always be there. And then I can sprinkle in something like running or passive stretching that I never would have done before and find some enjoyment out of it and find the aspects of those given things that I like. I almost forgot what the initial question was, but basically, just start with what you like to do. Start with what you like to do and stick to that. And then over time, as you develop the habit, then you can add or replace things, but build the foundation of having the habit of fitness before you try to do anything else that's fancy or ultra scientific or ultra difficult or whatever, because the foundation has to be there in order to support whatever you have to do past that.
That was a good answer, bro. You done good.
I looked into the light.
Do what?
I looked into the light. Now my eyes hurt.
I saw. Okay, so the only thing I love, you're right. Like, what's the best exercise routine for my goals? The one that you'll adhere to. How simple is that? And that gets to be very different. You know, movement is medicine. Motion is lotion. These things are, you know, I mean, the medicinal value of movement is far greater than anything. And so it can be easy to decide, okay, here's my goals. So then here's how to optimize my movement for those goals. And that's wonderful, right? But then if that didn't work for my brain and I'm unwilling to show up to that, do I need to shift and pivot my goals so that way I will show up? Yeah. And that's okay. And then, you know, what I love every one of these is I show up with a different perspective than you, you know? And so when I read that, my initial response is altogether different than what you just said. And I love what you just said, but you know, what is the best exercise routine for my goals? Of course, for me, I'm like, well, everybody gets this foundation of basically the same stuff. And then we sprinkle in from there, okay, what are your goals? And let's add in the things that are going to be appropriate for that. But like the foundation remains the same, that people need to have more lean mass on their bodies. And I'm looking at this through the lens of longevity. I'm constantly thinking, what is going to help you to be able to, if you experience injury or illness, that you can overcome that as best as possible. And so that's just the lens that I see things through based on the work that I do today, both for myself, even though I get to have fun in sport in different ways, and that's wonderful. But like for my clients so often, that's truly the priority. Mm-hmm. And then we have different flavors for them. But okay, so if that's the case, if it's what is the best routine for my goals, I'm always going to take it back down to like, okay, well, here's our basics. We've got to get you more lean mass on your body. We've got to get you access to more ranges of motion. And then we can have fun from there. And so it's not even really addressing their goals as much as I'm like, I don't really care who you are. These are priorities. And then we can add on.
Yeah. I think there are certain things that are just almost requirements to do anything that you deem to be fun within fitness. Having a certain level of range of motion, having a certain strength level or physical fitness level that allow you to do the things that you actually enjoy within fitness. You know, if somebody really, really likes squatting, but they just don't have the mobility to do so, well, then they just can't squat, period. You know?
Yeah.
Same with running. Like if somebody that just really loves running long distances or whatever, but they do it so often that, and they don't do any strength training to back that up to increase their longevity or durability within that, then now we're just avoiding things that are keeping us from being able to do what we love for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's those things that are ideal or even required supplements to the things that we like to do. And it's also important to know what those are or have somebody there to advise you to tell you what those are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for jiu-jitsu athletes, a lot of times they want to be really strong, obviously have some form of athleticism as a foundation and some mobility, but sometimes some of the things within training that get them there aren't always so aesthetically appealing up front.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times you get people that love to deadlift or do pull-ups or those things that are kind of cool to do that make you feel all cool to do, you know, because I am very much down that rabbit hole. But the things that are also indicative of your success in jiu-jitsu, such as like working the hell out of your hip mobility and all the various directions that the hip can move, and things that don't necessarily like shoot out to a person up front,
yeah,
but are so imperative to your success within your sport and also within the training that you're doing to get stronger within your sport. Those are the type of things that, yeah, may not be fun, but are also super necessary at a certain point. But I think it also comes down to what level of person are we talking about? Is it right. somebody that just has never worked out at all and wants to, or has found some enjoyment in running or some form of movement? Then I would just say, just like, let's just start there and start relatively light so you can recover, but at least like develop this habit of enjoying this thing that allows you to move.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, once that consistency is developed, whether that's a month in or 2 months in or whatever the case may be, now let's start add a little bit of this so we can keep doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think once the person, let's say it is a beginner, and they understand, oh, okay, I really like running, so I want to keep doing this because I've seen results. I've lost weight. I feel in better shape. I can run longer. I've seen progression in my running. Now it's like, okay, well, how do I run better? Well, we got to be able to do this in strength training to allow you to run better because of X, Y, and Z.
Totally.
And we got to be able to maybe structure some sort of running program that doesn't just tell you to run as far as you can every single day and get a little bit more strategic. And then it starts to click a little bit more even to the beginner because they see, okay, I really like this specific modality. I've seen the results from this specific modality. How do I do this longer and even to that effect, do it better? And then that's where other forms of fitness come into play. And then that's where they might even find a love in strength training that they hadn't found before,
mm-hmm.
because now they see the appeal that strength training has to said running or mm-hmm. what have you.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Runners, better glutes and hip flexors are like really, really cool, and hamstrings and other things like that. Anyway. Okay. So, we got to keep going. How can I build muscle or tone specific areas of my body?
I think just knowing conceptually how to maximize each and every rep you do with a particular muscle group. So in general, that's trying to achieve full range of motion. And if it's not full range of motion, at least trying to find the most lengthened part of whatever given rep or lift that you're doing and spend time in that position, whether you're trying to increase mobility or again, build muscle or tone muscle. Toning muscle is the combination of building muscle and then also having the nutritional habits in place that allow you to show the muscle.
Yep.
So with both of those things in mind, let's assume that the nutrition's on point. Well, then we build muscle in the gym by progressive overload. That's basic one. And then we, within that progressive overload, we want to make sure that we have intensity within our reps, but the intensity is on top of a foundation of intent.
Mm-hmm.
So every time we perform an exercise, we have an understanding of what exercise are we doing? A bicep curl. Okay. A bicep curl is for bicep. If we're trying to effectively isolate and bias this bicep for this bicep curl, then I need to find a way to get my chest and shoulders and back as much out of the equation as possible and keep it a single joint isolated movement as much as I possibly can, given whatever variation of curl that I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then past that, how do I load this resistance, whatever I'm choosing to do, in the most lengthened position of this variation of said curl?
Mm-hmm.
And that can, conceptually, it's the same thing across the board, but it can be a little bit of a tweak given whatever you're doing. I mean, even in our workout yesterday,
That's where I was going to take us.
Yeah. So you see concepts of things that you've been doing for a long time
mm-hmm.
in more free weight movements or kettlebell movements or whatever that you've done for yourself and your clients. Now just translating that to something like a hack squat machine
mm-hmm.
to where the same concepts are still applied across the board because we're effectively just trying to get stronger and build muscle at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes for a specific machine or a specific exercise, it doesn't stick out all too obvious as mm-hmm. what we might think. So there's little tweaks and things that you can do to further maximize the bias that you're trying to provide and increase the stimulus for that given muscle group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And your knowledge on this is so extensive that it can definitely become just kind of like over someone's head so rapidly without their ability to like have your hands on them, you know, and that's what's, it's been such a cheat code to have you, to be able to learn these things, because I came into this from a performance perspective in specific sport, and I was not thinking about body composition, how to optimize that, or any, you know, these are newer still concepts for me. So I'm learning, right? Because I've learned how to, thankfully, through the beautiful broad foundation that I received in CrossFit, truly, you know, I've gotten access to these grand ranges of motion. How wonderful is that? Yeah. You know, I've gotten this, this base of ability to perform a broad range of movement patterns and variety of different, you know, tax different energy systems because of that. So I have so much gratitude for it. And then also now to go, okay, well, I'm just now having some fun with, I'd like to grow my quads or my glutes or whatever. And so I've never looked at training through that lens before. And so now over the past couple of years, I've started to take my gaze there further and learned so much. I've had access to such phenomenal teachers, and you're at the top of the list for me of like, you know, so well, like your physique is a clear representation of the homework that you've done. And so when I read the question, how can I build muscle or tone specific areas of my body? I think you summed it up perfectly with the tone, with the simple, oh, what you mean by tone is nutrition, mm-hmm. you know, because I can't spot treat fat, you know, like I'm going to have to lose body fat across the board. And that's a time consuming endeavor, but it's an exciting one. Mm-hmm. But then when it comes to the muscles, how can I build specific muscles? The one that I'll just touch on what you did yesterday and then we can keep going. But I thought it was so cool. We were working on different things to really target my quads. And so that's the front muscle of the thigh for anybody who doesn't know. And one of the movements that I was doing, yes, we did the hack squat and we figured out some optimization techniques there. And I already have learned things about, you know, putting my knees over my toes and slowing things down and all of these wonderful things that I implement now with myself and my clients, and we're getting results. Yay. But we went over to a leg extension, and in the leg extension, you were able to in real time show me how in that fully lengthened portion for my quad in the most lengthened position. So where my foot is down closer to the, you know, to the ground, or my knee is in the most bend flexion, whatever, that's where that muscle is in its most lengthened position. And you're like, no, in order to grow this muscle, you want to slow that down and control that. And then sure, yes, you know, you get some bang for your buck out of the top too. But like, I've just been taught for years, you know, get to that end range, get it to its contracted position. And then that's where the money is, you know, that's where I'm going to get that lower portion of the muscle developed. But like, don't I want the whole thing developed? Right. And then also you pointed out on that specific machine, that type of thing, it's like, well, if I only ever focus really hard on this in its contracted state, then eventually I might feel some pain in my knees. Mm-hmm. And so I should also prioritize it in its most lengthened state. And so I can think of other muscle groups where I've already like come to understand that. And then this one we were doing yesterday, I'm like, I've still never implemented that with this. So it's so cool to speak to the progression and how much more is on the table for all of us.
Yeah.
And so that education was really cool for me.
Thanks, baby.
So thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So number five, four. Oh my gosh. We're only on four. What should I eat before and after I work out?
Different for everybody. But for me, generally all my meals are going to have protein because you have to hit your daily protein. So that's something to keep in mind. So there's no reason really to not have protein with the meal unless it's like right before and it's like really heavy and it's hard to digest.
Yep.
But with that said too, if it's a meal, then that's typically for me. I would find that I am okay with shorter time periods between meals and training than most people. If I ate a meal 30 minutes before training, I'd be fine unless it was just huge. But maybe on average, like an hour out before training sometimes for me. A lot. Sometimes I know people like to do like an hour and a half, maybe even 2 hours. But at the very least, make sure that you have protein so that you're always adding towards your daily protein total. But that's where we talk about, okay, like timing specific macronutrients. So those are generally the meals where I'm going to be a little bit more carb heavy, right?
Yep.
And if I'm training twice a day, then I'll plan two meals according to that. And if, you know, generally, you know, for me, if I'm training twice a day, the meal before the first session is a protein carb meal. The meal between the two sessions is a protein carb meal from the standpoint of recovering from the first workout and then preparing for the second. And then after my workouts are done, then I'm pretty good with just having protein and fats and calling it a day for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And something, even going back to the first question, something that's helped me in regards to maintaining a lower body fat or losing weight gradually over time is making sure every meal counts towards something or is actually like planned around something like training or whatever. And so, yeah, if I'm training maybe in the morning or early afternoon, then my breakfast will be my pre-workout meal.
Mm-hmm.
And then if for me, I have a second session usually, then that lunch in between will be my recovery or my post and my pre-workout meal. So it's kind of serving a purpose for both of my routines. And then of course hit that second workout and now I'm done for the day. A lot of times nowadays from a physique standpoint, I find that my physique looks more complete if I do eat carbs at night, as long as they're clean. You know, a lot of times the food that you make me, just a simple venison and sweet potatoes, seems to do my body well,
mm-hmm.
not cause me to spill over too much, but allow me to maintain a certain level of fullness. So from a bodybuilder perspective, I actually like it.
Mm-hmm.
But from a calorie control standpoint, and also just, again, trying to maintain a certain level of body fat, that's a good time after you're done with your training just to cut out carbs, just to have an easy way to control your calorie consumption throughout the day, and then have a little extra room for whatever fats you have to make up for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love this. It's been, yeah, yet again, it's been so cool to watch your nutrition shift even in the time that we've known one another. And you've already done so much. And that's what's cool is like we look at the whole journey of like we're always collecting information about how we do want to do things, about how we don't want to do things. And that's something that if you're listening to this, you know, like you can look at your history with your relationship with food and all of the things that you've learned and the things that you didn't enjoy that you did or you wish would, you know, you could. It's not for nothing. Mm-hmm. And so give yourself some grace and understand that you've been literally doing research in real time. And so then just keep doing research. And so with you're speaking to, I do multiple sessions and the meal timing, and I love so much of what you're saying. And then I'm thinking yet again, through the lens of the general population of people who are maybe training once per day at most, mm-hmm. and, you know, often lower intensities, lower time duration, things like that. And so for that individual, then it definitely, you know, I do my best to pull a lot of the information in regards to nutrition that I'm kind of, I mean, I have certifications, but I also, there are a couple of doctors that I really do respect what they have to say on this topic. I think they've done some remarkable research. And so I try to basically just regurgitate what they're teaching me. And so, and a couple that come to mind, if you hang around me any length of time, you've heard me say their names, but I do think Lane Norton knows what he's doing. And I think that Gabrielle Lyon is, totally my hero. So as far as the nutrition front goes. And so some thoughts about, you know, she wrote a book Forever Strong last year and she states that her opinion at this time about when we intake foods should really be, you know, front load your day, start with protein for sure. And then you can have some other stuff. Sure. When it comes to how you eat before and after your workouts, then yeah, make sure that you're properly fueled so that you can perform during your workout. But for most people, that doesn't mean some exorbitantly large meal with hundreds of grams of carbohydrates surrounding their workouts. Most people don't need that. In fact, carb control is a major factor for most. Mm-hmm. And so this is where there is individualization and we can't just make a blanket statement for everyone at all. But like generally, before workouts, yeah, some carbohydrates are great because your body knows what to do with them. And then I love your perspective today of like, I got this protein goal to hit. So like, it should just be all over the place all the time. And then it becomes this individualization. When it comes to carbs and fats, what I see to be true for the clients that I work with is they have different preferences. and they can still get really great results. And so some people really truly enjoy very low carbohydrate, high fat, and some are on the opposite side of that thing. And if we can still get them body composition goals, keep them within a caloric window that they are happy with, keep their protein high no matter what, that seems to be a cool thing. So there's the individualization, but does your body know what to do with carbohydrate surrounding workouts? Yes. Does it know how to handle them quite as well before bed? Not so much. You know, those are pretty mm-hmm. tried and true.
Yeah.
So, okay. Anything else?
No. It just basically goes down to, yeah, if you like no carb because it makes it simple and easy and mm-hmm. you don't feel like you're losing anything and you can stick to it, then that's a pretty effective way to do it, because that's a pretty surefire way to make sure that you're not going to be overly bloated on top of controlling an entire macronutrient. So naturally your calories in theory should be a little bit less.
Yeah.
Also too, I think with the carb thing, the carb control is so crucial for weight loss for so many people, because so many carbs, and I've learned this from you and now other YouTube rabbit holes that I've gone down, but so many carb sources in America, at least, have the ingredients, I couldn't even quote what they are, but have the ingredients that effectively make you immediately crave and want more of that. So you're more likely to overeat with the average consumption of your average, like, American produced carbohydrate, whatever that may be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anytime you've got an ultra processed food, AKA a food that when you read the ingredient label, good luck making it in your own kitchen, that's an ultra processed food. Mm-hmm. And processing is not just outright bad, right? But definitely reading the ingredient labels has been such an unlock for me with my experience with food. And I know it has been for you too, mm-hmm. to just start to pay attention. What is even in this thing? Not what it's marketed as, but let me flip this thing over, take a look at what's actually in it. Can I find that the second ingredient is sugar? Probably so. And if so, let me find one that's not the case, because we do have options,
right.
But it's just snuck in all over the place.
And even coming down to just bars, like protein bars, or yeah. just like anything that appeal in the sense of a protein, like quick snack that could then make you crave and make you binge at night or make you binge or whatever. Like
yeah.
those like little things that maybe we don't notice as much that make us end up falling off somewhere else. Like
yeah.
eating a little protein bar right here may not be all that bad, but if you feel cravings because of it, you don't even know, then that could be like the main issue.
Uh-huh.
Whereas generally, yeah, if I'm eating nothing but whole foods, then I never necessarily have this craving to fall off of that and or consume any more than what I currently am. But, you know, the few times where I go off track, and you've been there a handful of times, then it's just like avalanche, like downhill, like just like whether it's
yeah, I mean, as soon as you yeah, and that's where I love the humanity. Like for you, that's what it is. And for me, it's currently still just late night eating. Sometimes just bored, whatever, you know, mindlessness of I don't want to, you know, and it's the I don't want to sit with self. And I'm not even like conscious of this in the moment, you know, but the consciousness is becoming more. Oh, it's becoming more. And that's so cool. But like our own journeys with our own relationship with food are still ongoing and we're still learning and like your adherence to not doing the avalanche. And even like the past couple of times where you go off track of what you deem to be like your optimal diet has been really in comparison to history. Like nothing.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's progress.
Yeah,
just like me with my late night stuff is a continual progression. And then also I have a tendency to keep whole foods around and nutrient dense foods. And so I always joke around. I'm like, good luck binging on bananas. Like you're only going to eat so many before you're just kind of over it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so those are cool things because they really do contribute to your emotional well-being,
yeah,
and your ability to show up well in your relationships and all of those things. They're all impacted by our food behaviors, so they do matter,
yeah,
like a lot. And we're human and we get to be imperfect, and that's okay. Okay, so number five, how do I stay motivated to exercise regularly?
Going back to one of the other questions, just you have to find the fun in it first,
mm-hmm.
The fun and the consistency from wanting to do something fun elicits results. Then you do it because of the results and it's fun. So you just like add layers to that.
Mm-hmm.
Do something that you find to be enjoyable first, or at the very least, the least not enjoyable.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when you start to see the results, then the results start to motivate you. And then when you start to understand the importance of whatever it is, then that starts to motivate you. And then when you start to see the health benefits, which probably won't come as fast as the fat loss or even the muscle gain, but just starting to see how in your day-to-day life, your work or your life with your spouse, or your kids have improved because you've stuck to something for 5, 6, 7, 8 months or even a year, then that's where you're just like, okay, I see why this has to be an inevitable part of my day-to-day life. So, but starting with something as simple as, let me just pick something I like to do for fun. Let's just start there. That's where the majority of people basically need to start, unless they were born into something like I was. If you're not and you're starting fitness in your 20s or your 30s or your 40s, find something that's fun. Stick with it long enough to where you see results. After you see results, then you can start to see why it's beneficial even for a long-term health perspective. And then at that point, it should be easy enough to convince yourself why this should be a day-to-day thing. But don't enter things with a means to an end. So if somebody starts fitness to lose 50 pounds, a lot of times it's those stories that you hear about where that 50 pounds comes back on or even more than what they started with, because they get to that point and then what do you do at that point? They never really had like a follow-up plan, or they never built the actual enjoyment of fitness or working out or whatever. Mm-hmm. And because of that, they fall off, and you know, something happens in their life, they fall off and they get back to where they were, even worse. And I've seen it happen with people that I know where somebody loses a lot of weight and they put on that weight back and then some, and then because they've put on all the weight and then some, now they're even less motivated to go through the process, lose it again, because they knew how much sacrifice and work and how not fun that process was.
Right.
So then it just goes deeper and deeper down this dark rabbit hole because they just continuously talk themselves out of it or prolong this inevitable weight loss journey that will need to happen if they want to prioritize their health. Mm-hmm. So if you are wanting to start fitness because you want to lose weight, then that's pretty common and it's a pretty good reason to start. But along that journey, you have to find those things that you really find enjoyment in, whether it's community, whether it's a specific type of working out, or just it could be a bunch of different things, but you have to find that thing that's going to allow you to continue to build upon the habits rather than stop immediately once you see that specific number on the scale, or once that wedding's over with, or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. For a lot of times I see with wrestlers, so a lot of the people that I went to high school with that I wrestled around the same time with, not to call anyone out because I'm not, but it's pretty common to see a lot of those athletes that I wrestled with in high school gain a lot of weight afterwards, because wrestling was the sole motivation to lift weights, to wrestle, to stay in shape, to diet, to starve themselves.
I was going to say, and they were taught everything they needed to know about how to overeat and undereat.
Yes, right, exactly.
Ride the roller coaster. Mm-hmm. Big time.
And so for a lot of those people, there's those people that like get into lifting afterwards or whatever, and they end up doing okay. But there's a lot of those people where as soon as wrestling's done, because it was so grueling and really not all that fun, and you know, you don't do wrestling because it's fun. You do it because it's supposed to be like worth something at the end of it all, you know, because it's really not that much. That it's fun, but the training and the preparation, everything like that, is the worst part. So as soon as that's over, then again, there is a means to an end. So senior year comes, they graduate, they know they don't need to wrestle anymore, so they don't want to, you know, eat well or work out, and then college and stuff like that. And then I've seen people that wrestled like 132, and all of a sudden they're like now 220, 230, mm-hmm. bigger than I am, mm-hmm. Not all muscle either, you mm-hmm. know? Mm-hmm. So I think it's important when it comes to this type of stuff is to understand that this has to be long-term, mm-hmm. and a true lifestyle change rather than a short-term fix.
I definitely think that contributes so heavily. You definitely know this from me I'm so process oriented. I love how much time things take, you know, like I, and it's almost like weird. I'm really grateful for it, but like, I love that it took me 6 years, I think, to do like of doing CrossFit to get a strict handstand pushup, you know, like I, like things like that, where it was like the delayed gratification is, can be really long, you know? I kind of love, like, even when throughout that whole journey, I was like, I don't mind this. I don't mind this. I know I'll get it eventually. And I like, I don't mind this. So that's almost like a weird thing, because we typically like stuff right now. And I'm not saying I'm patient. I don't know that I don't believe that I am in many areas of life, although I'm working on it. But it's definitely like, yeah, can you just understand that, you know, when I think about how do I stay motivated to exercise regularly, it comes back to what I said earlier about stripping your emotions out of the thing. And motivation is, you know, if I'm depending upon my emotions about the situation to be able to carry me, then I'm in trouble. And so I've got to pull that out of it. And I've got to go, this simply comes down to what are the actions that I can adhere to? And then, like you said, finding the things that you find fun. For me, it really was community for so many years. That was like the motivator. And then thankfully now it's grown and I still love the community stuff, but it's grown. But I mean, we're what, over a decade in now or somewhere right around there? So yeah, right around a decade in. So like understanding, yes, you're your own best advocate for your health for life. Mm-hmm. So it is your responsibility. You have skin in the game, literally. You know, you're going to need to continue to show up and figure this thing out. So how can you do so in a way that you enjoy it, mm-hmm. and let yourself grow into it, because you're here for life, you know? Okay. Number six, is cardio or strength training more important for overall fitness?
Unbiasedly, I think strength training is. Maybe I put it at 60-40.
Yeah.
Something like that. 65, 35, maybe.
Okay.
Because the strength training to me is almost like that key to longevity. Mm-hmm. Whereas cardio can very much elicit very quick results. But depending upon the type of cardio you're doing, if you don't have the strength to back it up and you're doing a lot of cardio on lower calories and continuously like breaking down tissue, whether that's fat and or muscle, then you may not be as suited to continue that cardio modality for the rest of your life. Now, there's always extremes and certain things that can completely prove what I'm saying to be wrong. But I think for your general person, some form of strength training should be the foundation, and then mm-hmm. the cardio second to that. But if the option was cardio or nothing, cardio in a very small degree is technically still strength training. If the opposite end is just you not working out at all and sitting on the couch, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, if it's between cardio and strength training outweighs a little bit. If it's cardio and nothing, then at least cardio would probably be a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. I don't think I have anything to add other than, you know, if you want a great resource for somebody who can break down what the current science supported ratios of types of fitness is, you've got Dr. Peter Attia out there that just wrote a book that came out last year called Outlive. And that real he unpacks health in all areas, and it's a phenomenal book. But he talks on the internet about all this stuff all the time too. You could go listen to a podcast. You don't have to go read his book, but he breaks down like how much of each should we be doing according to, if we're looking at this from the perspective of longevity, which there I go again, just assuming that that's what you're desiring.
Well, let's make it super simple. Which option is going to allow you at the age of 80 to pick yourself up off the ground?
Yeah.
Uninjured.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Strength. I agree. Strength is going to be foundational, mm-hmm. and then a certain volume of cardio is good.
Yeah.
But not exorbitant amounts.
I know a lot of elderly people that like to walk,
mm-hmm.
not a lot of elderly people that like to train. And I've heard of a lot of elderly people, including one of my grandmothers that passed, that also fell on a walk and couldn't get herself up,
mm-hmm.
you know? Mm-hmm. So to me, longevity, strength training is important because, yeah, I have worked with a woman in her 70s. And that's what we mostly focus on, was how to build strength and getting out of her car, how to build strength and getting things off of the top shelf,
mm-hmm.
and then how to effectively build a strategy and standing up. We had to kind of teach her how to put down building blocks to take her from flat on her back to standing up without excess stress on her back, on her knees, and just teach her how to properly place her body to use her strongest parts to get back up to a standing position.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually one of the more interesting experiences for me as a coach, getting to do that, because mm-hmm. I've only ever had one elderly client, and that was a really cool experience for me, because it changes your perspective of what strength is, and also changes your perspective of, I train because I want to look like a superhero. I train because at one point I wanted to deadlift 800 pounds. I train because I want to do the splits. I train because I want to be this incredible pro wrestler. But some people just want to train because they want to be able to get up.
Yep.
And so the principles and concepts remain the same.
Yep.
Just transition and regression.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. Okay. What is the best exercise for beginners? What are the best exercises for beginners?
If we're talking strength movements, I could relay this from the standpoint of, if I'm training a kid, there's no negative of just trying to get really, really good at the most common or traditional bodyweight exercises, a squat, a push-up, some form of pull, maybe like a assisted pull-up. I remember
a row.
A couple of the kids that I trained back home, they used to always love when I would pick them up on the pull-up bar and do it like that. And they're twins, so like my shoulders would be like gas afterwards. But you know, they understood what a pull-up was at the end of that. You know?
I do this every week with multiple full-grown adults, by the way.
Happy for you. Good job.
Being able to do a pull-up is so cool.
Yeah.
So we're getting them there.
And then after that, as a beginner, you want to get good bang for your buck. So having a good selection of compound exercises, whether that's free weight or machine or cable or whatever it is, something that's just going to hit multiple muscles at once,
mm-hmm.
because it's almost easier to do something that's going to hit multiple muscles that at once, rather than really become intuitive on how to engage one specific muscle and use mind to muscle connection to keep tension on that one specific muscle. I think that's a step or two above where a squat, whether you're thinking about it or not, you are going to work your legs. It doesn't have to be a barbell squat. It could be a goblet squat. It could be a machine squat, but you're going to work your legs regardless of what level you're at.
Totally.
Yeah. And you can apply the same thing for upper body as well. So I would start there as a beginner,
mm-hmm.
build that foundation of strength, and then you can get more specific on particular isolation movements if you so choose to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love just speaking to the reality that like it is a progression. And so the isolation movements and even understanding what you're supposed to feel, like those things do take time. And so doing the more compound movements, the picking things up from the ground, the squatting, all those different things, like those are working multiple muscle groups at the same time, AKA compound. And whether you know what you're supposed to feel yet or not, you are working muscles.
Yeah. I think so. One opinion of mine that I'll hold pretty strong is powerlifter, bodybuilder, general fitness, CrossFit, Olympic weightlifter, like whatever your thing is in fitness, beginner or not, there's no reason why you should never not start or stray away from getting good at bodyweight exercises and master that and then become an expert at that and then weigh those things. Started doing push-ups as a kid for like warm-ups in baseball or football. And then now I'm doing it on rings with 125 pounds on my back, right? And there's no reason why I should ever stop doing those exercises, because I find them to be of the most crucial exercises that you can do for a bunch of different reasons. And a lot, I find that oftentimes they're slept on because we're spoiled with what we have access to in gyms.
Totally.
And somewhere along the line, somebody misconstrued those exercises as like beginner only exercises. You know, after you can do 10 or 20 push-ups and there's no reason to do them anymore or whatever, you know, and then we stopped doing those. Then we started doing like machine presses and dumbbell presses and bench presses. And we stopped doing that. I'm someone that always continually tries to get better at body weight movements because I found the most carryover to all the things that I've done, bodybuilding, powerlifting, jiu-jitsu. I think they're some of the most versatile exercises you can do.
I love how you just casually said with 125 pounds on your back on rings.
She lifted it on my back, actually. She was the one. Remember?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm strong.
Okay.
Thank you. It is funny. Like, still to this day, my favorite thing is when you actually somehow are surprised by my strength. It makes me happy. Thank you for doing that.
All the time.
It's just funny because I don't know.
Tell them what you did.
I don't know what you're referring
to. RDLs.
That's not that.
Yes, it is.
I don't know. I just did 100 pound dumbbells.
Look into the light and tell them what you did for RDLs.
I did 100 pound dumbbells for RDLs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did.
I did that. I'd be doing that.
Good job, baby.
I'm strong. I don't know. Is that impressive?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. How often should I work out each week?
The long-term perfect answer is as many times as you can without sacrificing your recovery and then having a split that coincides with your goals. But if 4 is your sweet spot and 5 and 6 is the spot where you start to feel that you're unable to recover, mm-hmm. then there's no point of adding in that 5th or 6th workout if you can't. I find that for a lot of jiu-jitsu athletes, 3 to 4 is a good sweet spot. Mm-hmm. For somebody that's only lifting, 4 to 5. For somebody that's really, really strict in bodybuilding and nothing too, too crazy on the CNS, 5 or 6. For somebody that's general fitness, you might have 3 days of strength training, a couple days of CrossFit, a day of active rest, and then a day of complete rest or something like that.
I think you just described me.
Basically, yeah. Yeah, basically. So, yeah, everybody's going to be a little bit different. A beginner is going to have a different threshold than somebody that's been in it for 23 years like myself. But frequency is very important, and it can be just as detrimental if you overdo it. And sometimes it takes trial and error to truly understand where that is. Mm-hmm. But when you start to feel as though the frequency level that you're at is starting to become a detriment, mm-hmm. the buffering period between that and you finding your sweet spot, if you can keep that as short as possible, then you should find that you'll stay away from those feeling of overtraining or exhaustion or what have you, which I still hit all the time. As you know.
Yeah, yeah, but, so you do, but I'm you're also striving person. For greatness in a variety of different ways. And as a direct result of that, like, you're going to bump up against some real...
I get tired sometimes.
Yeah, you push yourself to the limits, physically, emotionally, you name it, all the time, because you have the biggest goals that I know of. And so, like, you're going to... It's going to happen. And that's where... I try to ride the line of supporting you in encouraging what's going to get you there and then also encouraging you to rest because rest is so important and I'm a big fan of it, but it's hard. I get it. I think how often should I work out each week? Definitely. Like, there's so much variance within that. There's so much nuance of like what style of training. I think you covered so many different things so fast, which was cool. Because I know I jokingly say that I at least one day per week banish myself to just walking because I'm somebody that has come to understand that movement is medicine and from a psychological standpoint. Like, I know that if I will get up and intentionally move my body in some way each day, I will feel a lot better. And so it's important for me to move. Now, I'm not currently in a phase of 75 hard because I've done that for so many times now. And so, like, I can just have a total rest day. And I've allowed myself to have a total rest day multiple, you know, once a week or whatever it seems to be for a few weeks now. And that's been so nice.
Yeah.
And I don't feel any sort, but even still, life is in, is we're moving people, mm-hmm. you know? So even there, it's not truly just do nothing all day. But anyway, like, so to me, when I think about, you know, the advice of how often should I work out? Well, what's going to keep you in motion? You know, a body in motion stays at motion, a body at rest stays at rest. That principle, I like it. And so it's like, okay, well, what's going to keep you up and moving? Because we got to keep you moving enough to keep you moving, but also not have you moving at such intensity and volume and load that you're beat down all the time. Mm-hmm. And so that is, we got to take your life factors into consideration. What are the stressors that are taking place in your life? Do you have kids? Are you able to sleep a sufficient amount? You know, like there's just so much. Is your work highly stressful? Are you, do you have a parent that's sick? Like yeah. there's just so much to it mm-hmm. that has to be taken into consideration when it comes to how often you should work out every single week. And that's going to vary greatly for stages of life, not just from person to person, but like the season of life that you're in. And so, can I intentionally move my body each day so that I'm not just totally sedentary, getting in weird spots, maybe just psychologically, but then not pushing myself so much that I can't recover? Mm-hmm. Sweet spots.
Nice shot, babe.
You agree?
No.
Okay, number 9. How do I prevent injuries during exercise? You don't.
Yes.
Sorry, beat him to the punch.
Okay. Next question. You got all the answers. Go ahead. Next question.
Oh, do you want to tell them? Do you want to tell them your perspective?
No.
You don't?
Mm-mm. Okay. Yes. So avoiding injury up front is load management and exercise selection. Those are going to be the two most obvious to me. And then within the proper load management and exercise selection, there comes regression within particular movements to make a particular exercise appropriate per individual. And then utilizing the exercise itself to increase durability so that the chances of you getting injured doing whatever general form of fitness becomes much less.
Yeah, I think how do I prevent injuries during exercise is something that prevention, we can do our very best to make ourselves as durable as possible, taking ourselves from mobility to stability to strength, that trajectory that I love so much. I've got to be able to passively access the range of motion. You're smiling. Why are you smiling?
Because you said the same thing on the first one.
I did?
Yeah.
I love it so much.
I know, it's scripted.
I'm going to keep saying it, bruh.
I like it. It's fine.
To stability, can I be stable there? Can I hold the position? And then strength, can I load it? And so
it's like deja vu.
Listen, I say it all the time because it matters.
It makes me feel good.
Okay, great. So how do prevent injuries during exercise is can we be durable? Because I feel that the biggest injury is non-use. You know, I mean, the fastest way to get yourself in a bad spot is to not use things. Like you got to get through life. This is your vehicle to experience this. And it can be a beautiful experience, an empowered experience if you let it be. But obviously if you choose to play sports and you choose to go do pro wrestling, there's a risk all the time.
Yeah.
You choose to not play certain intramural sports because the bang for the buck is not there.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, so how do I prevent injury? It's more, can I make myself as durable as possible so that if, when life happens, you know, I mean, that's the same as like, I'll tell the story of whenever I dropped that barbell on my leg, you know, of I was in a competitive setting doing barbell cycling at heavy, heavy load.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I lost my grip on the barbell and it came down on me. And I was rushing through movements that I shouldn't have been rushing through. It was a competitive environment. These things happen. Mm-hmm. And I have it on video and I got forced into full depth, internal rotation, you name it. I received 165 pound load on one quad, you know, one femur.
Yeah.
Suddenly.
Yep.
Like this thing's flying back down at me. Mm-hmm. And anyway, I mean, I have a muscle contusion, which is where the belly of the muscle recedes from the area and is like, bro, what was that? And so there's a dent in my muscle.
It's called a striation.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's just actually the separation of my quad heads. That's what it is. But even my physical therapist, I went and saw immediately following, you know, he was like, this is, if you didn't train the way that you train with your full range of motion, with load, all of those things, there's a good chance you for sure would have blown your knee out. I don't know, your ankle's gonna, your ankle did some things in this, so that could have been in danger. And your hip, I mean, he was like, I mean, all your joints, if you didn't train them the way that you train them all the time, this would have been a worse situation. But yeah, somehow, structurally, you're intact, which is kind of wild. Mm-hmm. And so I still have an injury, but it's not as severe as it may have been.
Yeah.
Had I not been a trained individual.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, that, I think that goes to show some of the benefits that you had received from just doing CrossFit.
Yep.
And doing CrossFit actually helped prevent that injury from being way worse than it was, which then goes down another rabbit hole of the stigma towards CrossFit that's negative and everything. I never really understood that all that much, because my counter argument for every other type of fitness has so many things to make fun of that could make CrossFit seem just as dumb or just as good. Like, it's just, I don't know. But to that point, because of the way that the CrossFit had you training, mm-hmm, that injury became just a muscle contusion as opposed to like a fully torn knee, God knows what else, you know? So that's good. And that goes to show, because I had somebody at the gym right before I came back ask me what I did for recovery, and I laughed, and he's like, why are you laughing? And I laugh because I don't, as you know, I don't do a whole lot for recovery per se. Mm-hmm. I just do a lot that allows me to have to recover less than your average person. So I try to sleep well, not always the best, better lately. I eat pretty well, so those recovery aspects are relatively under check. But as far as massage work or chiropractic work or cold plunge, sauna commonly, not cold plunge, other stuff like that that people do, or a lot of maybe like rolling out or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't do all that much recovery work per se, but because of how I train in the gym, I'm able to endure a lot more than your average person, mm-hmm, and need a lot less to recover, because my body, what taxes or breaks down the normal person that doesn't train like I do, it doesn't nearly have the same effect on me. So I can have a really hard training day, get up and do it again the next day and, mm-hmm, be relatively fine.
Yeah. And that speaks to built capacity over the course of time. That's 23 years of work. But what's so cool too is yours started at age 5, and like, there are plenty of people out there proving that you can start in your 50s and get way freaking better, in your 60s and get way freaking better, you know? So just because yours is 5 to 20, almost 8. Mm-hmm. And you know, like, that's just your version of it. Mine is in my 20s to now, you know? So look out.
Wait, you're older than me?
Number 10. What's the role of supplements in my fitness routine?
Barely? Not? I don't know.
Are there any supplements that you currently take?
Yeah. Like the magnesium L-theanate for sleep at night. That was recommended by a friend. Mm-hmm. I feel as though it's helped for reasons I won't talk about on the podcast. But
well, I feel like also for you, you use the sauna a lot, and that probably depletes that, which would then...
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
I would say I've noticed the biggest benefit more recently from your electrolyte suggestion, if you want to consider that a supplement. Creatine's sure. Great.
Yep.
I also, though, since I eat so much red meat, I don't feel any different if I'm not taking it in a powder form at all, though. Mm. So I feel like for the amount of red meat that I eat, is a kind of a waste.
Mm. Interesting.
To take, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but protein's good if it's going to help you meet your protein goals.
Mm-hmm. And your caloric intake goals, because often people, you know, their caloric intake goal is maybe less than what they were eating if they weren't otherwise trying to control it. And so then protein powders can have real bang for their buck, but then also we don't want to become overly reliant on those for digestive purposes and so on.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know if I, for your normal person without any direct need for supplements, I don't really think that. I think it's a lot of it's placebo because the effects are very minuscule for the majority of supplements. And even for the ones that are proven to work, I don't even know if I feel like they work like they, like science says they work for me anyway. So I don't know. I really don't know. I take things because sometimes I trick myself into thinking that it works better than it does, or I saw a study that says it's supposed to work better than the next thing or whatever. But I don't know if I necessarily truly believe that way, because there's been times where I just don't take any supplements at all. And I don't know if I truly feel any different or look any different or whatever. I can tell an immediate difference from food changes, but supplements, not really.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what's the role of supplements in my fitness routine? I think what's so nice is, like, can we continue to tinker and optimize and so on? Like, yeah, sure. And that's fun. And there are multiple supplements that I take every single day, and that I, you know, one supplement that I do recommend heavily for most is creatine, because of the tremendous benefit that's available for the amount of research that's been done on this, for how inexpensive it is to supplement with. And most people are not consuming the volume of red meat that you are.
Yeah.
And so creatine is something that just has such bang for its buck. And if you will go ahead and consistently take it, that I think that that one's a great one for everybody at all ages. I mean, the cognitive benefit.
I started taking it in eighth grade.
Really?
Yeah.
5 grams a day in eighth grade?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. And then from there, you know, the sodium, potassium, magnesium component that you're talking about that I've encouraged you to take in your water. And that had a lot to do with just because of your, like, cramping, how much you sweat, things like that.
Yeah, I will say that I've noticed a big difference in
even energy levels.
Yeah, I've experienced some cramps, just, but like they're very like tickly, as opposed to like the ones that lock.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah. So I think the thing that's cool with supplements is, like, yeah, we can play around with some different ones. I mean, I do choose to take a greens powder. You know, there are different things, but like, it doesn't, I think oftentimes most of the nutrients we're seeking through supplementation, we can often find ways to incorporate in our just like whole foods diet and get really tremendous. And then often that's an energy, or I'm sorry, a money savings, because if we add up all of these different supplements that we're taking all the time, if we're going to get all of our, you know, oh, I need a little bit more fish oil instead of eating salmon twice a week, I'll just take another fish oil, you know? And so not saying that you shouldn't, right? I'm not saying that, but like, could it potentially be available to you in the form of food?
Yeah.
And then that comes with all of these other benefits as well, versus the supplement version. So not demonizing, there are certain ones that I take every single day that I recommend, but I think that it's interesting. It's an interesting world to play with.
I guess I also take
caffeine.
Yeah, caffeine.
Yeah, you do intake caffeine.
Yeah.
That was one I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's the main one.
It's a great one. Okay, we made it through all 10.
Mm-hmm.
How you feel about it?
Great.
Okay. So, oh my gosh. Okay. So let's wrap up with, see, the time of day has me so thrown off. Like, this is the first time I've done like a late night podcast, and it's you, but this is great. So thank you for choosing to be here and answer my simple AI generated 10 most common questions asked to a fitness professional. The reason that I chose to do this with you is because what I said at the beginning is true. I have so enjoyed getting to learn from you about training and so many other things. And so it's like, I feel like it's unfair for me to get to experience this from you. And so now I'm just taking that unfair advantage and doing my best to share it with my people. So thank you.
I love you. Thank you.
Three things you're grateful for today.
What did we say?
I don't know. What'd you say?
What did you say?
Do you want me to go first?
Go ahead.
Three things that I'm grateful for today. Well, I got my Texas driver's license today, so I am a Texan. So I'm grateful for that, getting that taken care of. If y'all know anything about those processes, they're not the most fun, but we got it done. I am also grateful for you are about to move. You and your best friends that moved here with you from Arizona are about to move into a place where you'll have a bit more space and so on. And so last night you guys all got together and watched WrestleMania together, and I got to cook food, and like that was a cool experience to be able to just like capture that moment in time, as all of your lives are continuing to expand and evolve. And to know that like these were your humble beginnings here, mm-hmm. and they actually started when you were children back in Arizona. Yeah. But so I'm grateful for being able to like experience that. That's cool. And then I am grateful for my mom and my sister and my nephews were all together for the eclipse today. So I'm grateful that they were together.
Good. Is it my turn? Okay. Well. So many things I could say. I think back to the first podcast.
Uh-huh.
I remember like listening to your other podcasts where you're like, I'm grateful for you coming on the podcast today. And then they're like, I'm grateful for you. And then I'm like, you know what? And then you asked.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, I'm grateful for you. I'm grateful for Matt or whatever else I said. And then it was your turn. You didn't mention me at all. I was like,
oh no.
So maybe I get you back.
You're such an attention to detail guy. Oh my gosh. You know what? I want you to say whatever's authentic for you.
I'm grateful that the first podcast was the start to me coming to date and fall in love with the perfect woman for me that I love so very much, and she feels so awkward right now and it's okay, but I love you and I appreciate all the support that you go so above and far and beyond to show me on a daily basis, and I never knew I could feel this way about someone until I met you. And I'm just very grateful to have so much confidence in the life that we're going to build together. And you've by far made me such a better person. And from the first podcast to now, I'm very grateful that you did see me through and let me get to this point. Sorry, guys. Yeah. And I feel as though, yeah, I finally came across a person that I think I've always wanted and selfishly deserved. And it's cool having saw you before even moving here. And then like, oh, she seems cool and everything. Like, and then now like we're at where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all just one gratitude, but I'm grateful for you and I love you. So thank you.
I love you,
baby. I'm grateful for basically this month signifying a new chapter for a bunch of different things, the move, different things that have happened this past week, my birthday, my 1 year anniversary of moving to Austin is I think in 3 days or something like that. Got my first live wrestling match in Arizona next month. So
let's go.
I get to bring Claire to Arizona.
Let's go.
I know. So
only Spears.
Only Spears. They don't need to know what it means. Yeah, so a lot of new things happening. So grateful for that. And then grateful for constantly being scared as fuck that I'll not do what I want to do with my life, but I'm just going to keep pursuing that shit as ignorantly as I can until I do.
The very first episode with you was titled Delusional Optimism.
Yep. Still got it.
Still got it.
Also, more delusional every day.
All it is now is I just like, I believed you then. And I like really believe you now.
I believe in you too.
Thanks. All right, guys. That's enough. Let's see. All right, now we got to round this thing out. Okay, oh, you know what? I will put links in the description to both of our coaching businesses because we do both offer online coaching and they're a little bit different. So just check them both out and whatever resonates with you. I truly believe that if you choose to work with Jimmy, you're going to get a phenomenal experience. You're going to learn a ton, and you're going to move better, feel better. And I also believe that if you choose to work with me, I think you're going to get those things. I think that we make a really cool team. Like, we were already doing all right solo, but I know that I'm a better coach because you're in my life.
Me too.
And yeah. So anyway, I'll put those in the description if you are curious and would like to work with one of us. And other than that, we just hope that you choose to have a beautiful day.